Hello and shalom. Welcome to this episode of Image Bearers Radio. I'm your host, Joe Amon. We got a great show ahead, so buckle up and hang on. Here we go. Hey, shalom, shalom, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Image Bearers Radio. I'm your host, Joe Amon, coming to you all the way from Out of Ashes Ministries in DeRidder, Louisiana. You are joining us for episode 139 of Image Bearers Radio, and I'm so glad that you are here. I'm super stoked to get to spend this part of every week with you guys. Whether you listen by audio or you're watching this video podcast online, either way you connect, it's so cool to be with you, and I hope that your week is going incredibly well. So let's get preliminaries out of the way. If it's your first time listening or watching, joining Image Bearers Radio, thank you guys so much for giving us a shot, and I hope that you stick around for the conversation. Again, you may be listening to this through podcast. You may be listening on Hebrew Nation online or watching the archive there. Maybe a friend recommended us to you, and so you're checking it out. However you found us, I'm so glad that you did, and I hope that you enjoy the rest of the episode and the conversation. Image Bearers Radio is about doing just that, about how to fulfill our image-bearing vocation as image bearers of God and to present Him to creation. And we ask ourselves a lot of hard questions of the Bible. It's a great conversation. So thank you guys for being here. If it is your first time with us, then I want to invite you also, Out of Ashes Ministries, we live stream our Shabbat services every single week at 10 a.m. Central. So maybe you have a fellowship, but you are it's at a different time, maybe just looking for something else to check out on Shabbat, or maybe you don't have fellowship and you're just looking for somewhere to connect. Either way, we would love to have you visit with us, Facebook, YouTube, on our website, outofashesministries.org/live. And check us out. We have a great community, a lot of comments and a lot of interaction in the comments of both Facebook and YouTube. So check us out there. It would be great. If you are a longtime listener slash watcher, follower, whatever of IBR and Out of Ashes Ministries, thank you guys for being an awesome community. We love you so much, and we just cannot express how fortunate we are to have you all. You guys are fantastic. You make this thing go. You make it wonderful. And I just appreciate you so very, very, very much. And I'm going to do something that I have started doing in the last few weeks that I'm very uncomfortable with, but I'm going to do it anyway. And that is, I want to ask you guys, if you are gaining some benefit from Image Bearers Radio, especially the radio show, and if you like, if you enjoy it, if you're sharing it, I want to ask you guys to think about supporting us. Just so little could go so far. If you go to outofashesministries.org/give, then you can give there. You can give one time. You can give a recurring gift and set it up. It can be $5 a week or a month or $2 a week, whatever it is. Just have some investment with us and help us to improve the quality and to get a further reach and all those good things. It is a good thing and a good place to be. And so we appreciate you guys who partner with us to increase our reach and our quality and all of that. So thank you very much. Now, as is our custom, let us go to the Father in a short bit of prayer. Avinu Malkinu, our Father and King, we bless you and thank you for all that you have done for us. We thank you for this opportunity, this time to be together, Father. As we discuss, as we talk, as we ask questions, Father, I pray that you would make us better image bearers for your sake. Amen and amen. Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. So thank you for always allowing us that few moments of prayer. I think it's important that we get our minds right and get our hearts situated to what we are here about. So I say this, I have said this the last several episodes, but I want to make sure that I'm kind of keeping everybody up, and I want to repeat kind of these things every week because I live with this stuff. I know what I'm doing and where I am. Most of the time, I know what I'm doing and where I am, but I know for you guys, you're hearing this once a week. You're probably not thinking about all this stuff as much as I am, at least the Image Bearers Radio side of things. As much as I am, so I just want to kind of remind you guys where we are. So we are in the middle of a series where we are following behind the series we're doing on Shabbat during our Shabbat fellowship, and we're several weeks behind that. And we're in this series called "What Do You Want?" And so this is all about increasing our observance. And increasing our observance, why? Why are we interested in increasing our observance? Well, because we are what we do, and so many of us call ourselves Torah observant or Torah pursuant. And I wonder how much we're actively growing in actually doing the Torah. Because the Torah is not just an idea. The Torah is not just a concept or a theory. The Torah is action. It is where the character of God and the teaching of God, literally Torah, instruction and teaching, meets real life. And if we are to really be Torah observant or Torah pursuant, then it entails us continually engaging more and more of the Torah and actually doing more and more of the Torah. So that's where this whole thing started, and we have spent some time in identity because we kind of came to a place where we realized, well, wait, sometimes it's like, well, I have to know who I am and where I'm going, and I have to know what I'm shooting for in order to kind of be, you know, really convinced that I can do this Torah thing, right? And so we spent some time talking about identity, and I asked you guys to do some self-analysis and some inventory. And I want to say, I hope that you're still doing that. I hope that it didn't just stop whenever we stopped talking about it. Just because, you know, I encourage you guys to check out the book Atomic Habits by James Clear. Again, not a religious book, but I think a really powerful one as it relates. When we talk about habits, if we can think about halakha or observance or ritual or liturgy, some of the words that we talked about in our first couple of episodes, I think the book can be really, really inspiring and really challenging for us. So some of the quotes that I love the most out of the book, the first part of the book at least, is he says, you know, we should constantly be editing and expanding our identity. So he says it's important not to get too comfortable with one version of yourself. And I just think that's so incredibly freeing and helpful and important. Don't get too comfortable with a version of yourself, because that's where you're just going to stay. And if staying there is okay with you, then fine. But I don't think that's who I'm talking to. I don't think I'm talking to people who just want to stay where they are, who they are, forever. I think I'm talking to people who want to grow and who want to fill out and push the boundaries of this image-bearing capability. You know, we were brought into the kingdom. We were saved, you know, by Yeshua, and we are saved for something, not just from stuff. You know, we're not just saved from stuff. We're saved for stuff. And so many of our journeys into the Torah has been about what we've been against. Right? We've been against church. We've been against Christian theology. We've been against Christmas and Easter. We've been against eating pork. We've been against this. We've been against that. And it's like, it's time for us to be for stuff. And God saved us for things. And those things are the Torah. And so that's kind of where we are. And so that's just a recap, all right, of where we are. That's the intro. All right. So we came through the identity section. And then last week, we started talking about really the in my estimation the atom of identity, the smallest you know form of identity that we can have. And maybe to some people's surprise, it's not saved or, you know, restored or delivered or any of those things. Where I'm going off of this is that there's one characteristic that God says about himself. He calls himself this. Now, and then he calls us to be the same thing, right? Now, God, you know, the scriptures say that God is love, right? But God, to the best of my ability, I haven't been able to find where he says that about himself. It is true. God is love, and he expects us to be people of love, right? I'm not taking that away. God is also merciful and, you know, loyal, and he's all the things we believe he is. But there's one characteristic that God says, I am, this is who I am, and I want you to be this as well. And that is kadosh, holy, or kadosh, holy, right? And we're not going to use the word holy much because it just has all kinds of connotations and background for us. But we started to talk last week about kedusha, holiness, right? And we ended up by kind of giving a definition of kedusha. So if you've missed this beginning part of this, go back to last week, episode 138, and listen to that, watch that. So we came up with a definition of kedusha, I want to start with the quote that we left off with last week, because I think it's awesome. This is the part I want to read. It says, an examination of the mundane entities termed kadosh in the Bible. Let's just break that down. Let's stop, because we didn't really get to spend a lot of time on this last week, and I think it's important. So when we look at the mundane entities that are called kadosh, I think this is such an important part of this kedusha, this holiness thing. Again, this is the one thing God says that he is, so that we are to be also. And so as we're talking about identity, this is where we start. We are mundane. In some ways, humanity, right, is the height of creation. And yet, whenever we look at all of the things in the Bible called holy, the only thing that's not holy is God himself. Other than that, everything else is considered mundane. When you're talking about animals that are, you know, holy sacrifices, holy offerings, korbanot. When you're talking about, you know, the Mishkan and temple furnishings, you know, shovels and tables and stuff like that, that are holy. When you talk about these things, they're just mundane things. They're not anything that have any intrinsic value necessarily, but they are called holy. They are elevated to the status of holies, of holy. And so he says, when we examine those things in the Bible, it reveals that they are set aside, are designated. And we said last week that, you know, the definition of holy that many of us have is set apart, or a little bit further set apart to God, right? Which is true, and it's a good definition. It's just not quite full enough. It's not quite big enough. We want to enlarge that definition, right, and expand on that idea. So mundane things are set aside and designated, right? Here's the important part. They are all set apart for the service of God. We're good there, but here's where we fall off on our definition sometimes. They are set apart for the service of God by formal legal restrictions and limitations. Formal legal restrictions and limitations. I could talk for probably hours just about this phrase, formal legal restrictions and limitations. So literally, the thing that makes something holy is not really because God said it. And I'm going to get to that in a second. So if you're saying, yeah, but God declared us holy, so that's really what makes us holy. Not true. Not true. Well, kind of true. But again, that's part where we have a narrow or too small of an idea, a definition, and a working of that. We need to expand on what that could mean, right? And so formal legal, we get formal especially when we talk about Torah, because we think about temple. We think about formalities of the temple, right? There's a certain way you bring the offerings. There's a certain way that the Kohanim conduct the service. There's a certain way they wash their hands and feet. There's a certain way you actually bring your korban and lay hands on it and confess and all those different. There's a certain formality to all those things. And I've said forever that one thing that I appreciate about organizations or groups like the Catholic Church is that they have upheld the formality of service to God and, you know, in mass and different things like that. Now, it doesn't matter if I agree or disagree, or if you disagree or agree, that doesn't matter to us. The Catholic Church is doing its thing and, you know, and whatever. I'm not here to agree or disagree. It doesn't matter. But it's the formality that sometimes we have lost. We have gotten casual, which is okay. But sometimes we get too casual. Synagogue is another way where, you know, it's the formality that's beautiful, the ritual. It's a respect and a dignity and an honor for the sacred things, right? But then the second part is the part that gets us. Formal, legal restrictions and limitations. When we get done with Kedusha in a week or two, we're going to go through some time of talking about the Sanhedrin, because that's going to prepare us for where we're going ultimately in our discussions about halakha and observance and stuff. So, but we need to talk about Sanhedrin first. And we're going to understand more of the legal ramifications. But, you know, we call it the covenant, right? We are people of the covenant. And yet a covenant is legal. It's legally binding. And when we talk about Sanhedrin, we're going to talk a lot about the judges, because starting all the way back with Moshe, because that's how you preserve Kedusha. It's how you preserve order, is through a system of judgment and wisdom and all these legalities, right? Now, there's an idea that, you know, floating around, or it's been floating around for a long time, but in some circles where, you know, legalism is like the big cardinal sin. That's the capital offense is legalism. And it should be that we desire to be more legalistic in the things that are right to be legalistic about, right? Not just in stuff that's made up, but in stuff that we can find, of course, that's established in the Torah, and then that is, you know, is walked out from there. So Kedusha is about formal legal restrictions and limitations. Let's talk about restrictions and limitations. Again, what makes us holy, or what determines our, what is a sign of our level of holiness, of Kedusha, is not that God calls us holy. It's not that we run and dance. It's not that we speak in tongues. It's not that we, you know, it's not that we do all of those, you know, any of those things. What defines our level of Kedusha is the amount of limitation that we have on that's been placed, or that we would submit to, the amount of restriction that we will submit to. Because here's how this works. If you say, well, yeah, but God has declared us holy, and that's what matters. He said it, so I am it. Yes. I was going to say but. I'll say yes and. Or yes, yet. God calls us a lot of things, and those things are all true, that we are new creation, that we are above only and not below. We are the head and not the tail. We are redeemed. We are delivered. We are restored. We are, you know, we walk in the soundness of mind and in power of the Spirit. All those things are true that God declares over us. But let me ask you a question. How well do you do moment to moment, day to day, in walking in the fullness and realizing those things? How well do you do, we talked about this a few weeks ago, with how well do you do with making the God called me side and the this is really how I'm acting? How do you do with those two? Is there a rub there? Are they just completely disconnected? Or are they jiving and are they moving together at the same time in the same rhythm, right? So God can call us whatever he wants. But ultimately, we have to accept, and then we have to follow, and we have to embrace, and we have to do the things that cultivate what God has called us. God, I've said this a while back, I wish I could just give you your biblical identity. I wish I could just hand it, just open up your head and just give it to you. But not even God can do that. Why do you say that? It's just what we were talking about. This idea that God has given us this beautiful new identity, that we are no longer captive to sin and to bondage, that we are free, that we are free to worship in all freedom, right? And yet, how many believers are still bound up? It's not that it's not true that we are that God has declared us that. It's that we have not followed through and we are not actually living in what God has said we are. So there's a disconnect there. And I'm not saying that that's sin. It's not that. I'm just saying there's room to grow. That's the hope that I want to give you, because it is full of hope. There's room to grow in that area between what God calls us and where we actually are. Don't get disappointed because you're not living up to all that God called you to. Realize that God set some really, really beautiful identity inside of us. And yet it takes some time for us to work up and work through and work to that. But there is hope that you can. There is hope that you can. That's the process we're involved in right now, is walking to what God has called us to be, right? And I believe, and you believe because you're listening, that an incredibly intricate and intimate part of that is observance to the Torah. That is going to create in us that actual real identity. That the Torah is there to teach us and to instruct us, the Torah and the Spirit, to fill the gap between what God said we are and what we know we're not. That is where the Torah comes in. Isn't that beautiful? I think that's beautiful. And that's the hope that I want you to hear. So legal restriction, what determines our kedusha is restrictions. It's not a declaration, it's restrictions. God declared it, yes. And so we are holy, kadosh. However, the amount of holiness that we will embody is incumbent upon how much restriction and limitation we will submit ourselves to. Now, you might sound like, that doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, fun has really nothing to do with it. The point is that when we look at Kedusha, and we will in the second segment, and look at things that are called Kadosh, they're always tied to restrictions and limitations. Now, sometimes those restrictions and limitations, quote unquote, will come in the form, well, they'll come in one of two forms as it relates to the Torah. They'll come in the form of positive commandments, you shall do, and negative commandments, you shall not do, right? The counting, the traditional counting of the Torah called Taryag, T-A-R-Y-A-G, Taryag mitzvot, is 618 commandments, right? 200 and some odd of them are positive, and 300 something are negative. Or forgive me if my math is off, my numbers are off, but there are positive and negative. So it doesn't mean there are good and bad commandments. It means that the positive ones say you shall do this, which if the commandment is you shall do, then there is also an inverse to that, which is if you're going to do this, and there's stuff that you're not going to do, right? And then some are negative, you shall not do. Again, which if you shall not do, the inverse is true that you shall. So there are really positive and negative sides to all of the mitzvot. But when we classify those things, they are the restriction and limitation. They are the basis of Kedusha, right? They're the basis. And remember, I know we all know this, you all know this, but it's something I have to kind of repeat, that the Torah is instruction. It's instruction, right? We talked last week about Beit HaMikdash, right? Beit HaMikdash, the house of Kedusha. That's the temple, right? And that the temple, why temple study is so important, is because it teaches us Kedusha. It teaches us. Man created in the garden, this is from last week, was created in the image of Hashem, who is the ultimate of holiness. And so we were created with Kedusha, and then man fell and lost that Kedusha. And so Hashem gave the Mishkan, the temple, in order to teach us what that's like. And what is the Mishkan? What is the temple? It's a picture of the Garden of Eden, right? The parochet, the curtain, has the cosmos on it. And so the temple, the house of Kedusha literally teaches us the way back. to our Kedusha. That's a beautiful thing. So we're going to start talking a little bit more about Kedusha after the break. Don't go away. We'll be right back in just a minute. All right, welcome back. So the Kedusha of periods of time, such as Shabbat and the Hagim, are marked by limits, restrictions on man's activities of work, and as it relates to Shabbat, creation, because that's the whole Shabbat thing is all creation, right? So what I came up with this thing a couple years ago, maybe a year ago or so, and I think it's so very true, and I think it's so important that we kind of reframe things this way. So think about this. Let's say you take a bicycle wheel, okay? A bicycle wheel with all the metal spokes, right? However many metal spokes a bicycle wheel has, right? If you know anything about this, if you've tinkered with a bicycle ever, you know that each one of the spokes can be tightened and loosened in order to fix the roundness of the wheel or the roundness of the bicycle wheel of the tire to make it run more true, right? And so you have all these spokes that you can tighten and that you can pull the wheel back and forth. You can pull it in and out so that it either you can true it up, right? But none of that matters. What are those little spokes pulling against? They're pulling against the hub, right? Now, if you take the hub out of a bicycle wheel with all the little wire spokes, what happens to the wheel? Well, it deforms, right? It flattens or it can easily be bent because it doesn't have the tension of those spokes pulling against it to keep its shape and to keep its form. And if you take the hub out, it starts to deform, it gets all out of whack, then it's not functional, right? Then it doesn't work. It doesn't work for its intended purpose. It could hurt somebody. I mean, we can stretch this as far as we want, but I think you get the analogy. In my mind, we should be seeing the Torah as the wheel, the tire, the bicycle wheel, and the spokes, okay? So what's the wheel? Well, the wheel would be the stuff that we study in the Torah. So in a bicycle wheel, it would be festivals. It would be Shabbat. It would be priesthood. It would be calendar. It would be the name. It would be justice. It would be, you know, equal weights and measures. It would be the offerings. It would be all of the things of Torah that we study is the wheel. Now, what has happened in our walk, in our movement, is that we have forgotten the temple, and in the way that I'm talking about this, the temple is the hub. It's the center point that keeps everything in shape, right? But we don't study the temple. Generally, in the non-Jewish world, in the Hebrew roots world, we don't study the temple really. You know, we may know a little bit about the Mishkan and whatever, but we don't really, really study. We don't study the things of Torah in relation to the temple. And if the temple is Beit HaMikdash, the house of Kedusha, then the temple is central in keeping. So what we've done in keeping everything in line, right? So what we've done is you came into the Torah, you were introduced to the Torah through Shabbat, right? Which is the way that Hashem uses to bring a lot of people into the fullness of the Torah is through Shabbat. And maybe you don't understand a lot about Shabbat, or maybe you have done a ton of study about Shabbat, but you never really focused on how does Shabbat relate to the temple? What are the laws of Shabbat as as done in the temple's time and you know, times of the temple and by the priesthood? How does Shabbat relate to temple worship, and what was done on Shabbat in the temple, et cetera, et cetera? And so what we do is then, without a temple understanding, our study of Shabbat gets pulled. We don't have any accountability for it. It gets pulled out, sometimes out of whack, and it skews what the whole system is. Maybe your thing is calendar. And maybe you study, you know, you're a calendar student. This time of year, calendar debate is roaring and raging, as it does every year, which is fine. Good. Go study the calendar, all the different calendar options and stuff, and make your decision. Be informed. I don't have a problem with anybody doing any calendar. I just have a problem with you being belligerent about it. Do your research. Know why you follow that calendar. Knock yourself out. Peace, blessings, go with God. It's all good. Just don't be militant about it. Don't be belligerent about it, because other people have done study and they've come to a different decision. So respect each other and then good, go, good. I just don't want you to be ignorant about what you're doing. If you follow a certain calendar, great. Just don't be ignorant about it, right? Okay, good. We're all friends. All right, good. So, but maybe you've studied the calendar, but you've never studied how the calendar was done in the temple. And so maybe your calendar view is pulled way out. It's pulling the Torah way out. And the problem with this, or the concern, can be that when we study some of these things and they get, you know, they become kind of all we're about, or the main thing we're about, we start to see the Torah in a misshapen way through the lens of that thing. So just a for instance. If you believe in the flat earth, you know, if you're a flat earther out there, I love you. Okay. I really do. But if you have a flat earth view of the world, then you can't deny that does shape how you see the temple. I mean, how you see the Torah, excuse me, as a whole, right? It, you read the Torah in a certain lens, and that's just the way it goes. I'm a temple fanatic. I read the temple into everything in the Torah, even to the point where it might not be about that, but that's the way I read it, right? What I want us to do is not stop reading it that way or not stop doing that, but I want you to at least understand that you have that lens and understand that it colors the way you see the Torah. Then understand that somebody else may have a different lens and a different way that colors the Torah for them, and learn from each other and be okay, right? That it's not just your or my way. So we have this thing. So I believe it's important that we at least consider the temple, because when we understand that it kind of holds every, you can't get too isolated in your study of a thing if you're studying it in the light of temple practice. Why do I say that? Well, because the temple, everything revolves around the temple in the ancient Israelite world. Everything revolves around the temple. It's all tied into the temple. And so the temple tends to keep things in balance. Okay, so I'll stop beating that horse again. I could go on about this for hours, but I will spare you and I won't do that to you. So when we talk about things like about periods of time, right? We're going to start out talking about Kedusha as it relates to periods of time and the legal restrictions and limitations, right? So when we talk about periods of time, they are marked by limitations on a person's work and creativity, right? Construction, creation, those kinds of things. When we talk about, again, tithes, and animal carbonate, right? Sacrificial animals. These are tithe, you know, your grain, you know, your animals that they're endowed with kedusha. They're given kedusha, and they are prohibited from being used for mundane purposes, right? Once that tithe is separated, and it is intended for the tithe, you can't take it back and use it for something else. Once those animals have been separated and they are designated for the tithe, are for the offering, you cannot then take them back and use them for other things. One of the things that that Joseph Good teaches us in the temple study is that once something reaches a level of kedusha, it cannot go back. It cannot go into a lesser, you know, state of kedusha without some functionality and formality there. So you think about, if you've watched OAM at all, you've seen me do this goofy concentric circle thing. I don't think it's goofy, but you may think it's goofy. But this concentric circles, right, where we start out here, and as you go in a level, we're going closer to ground zero, which is the Holy of Holies, okay? Holy of Holies is the most holy place on the planet, hence the name. You're going to the Holy of Holies, right? Holy of Holies. Start out here. Out here is like the nations, right? The nations. Are the nations holy? In their own way. Then you go to the land of Israel. Is it holy? It's holier than the nations, actually. And we're going to talk about the 10 levels of Kedusha at some point. But you go all the way up. The thing is that everybody, especially if you come from a, you know, a Christian background, everybody wants to be in the presence of God, right? That's what our whole like doctrine is on, just to be in God's presence, right? The problem is that in reality, there's only one man that could be in the presence of God only once a year, as in like in the presence of God, right? Which is the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur at the specific time of the service. So the Kohen Gadol, or nobody can just go into the Holy of Holies just whenever they want to. The Kohen Gadol can go into the Holy of Holies, but not when he wants to, right? Not even on Yom Kippur when he can he go in when he wants to. It is a highly, highly choreographed, very carefully, meticulously done ceremony where he goes into the Holy of Holies. And it's not just like, oh yeah, we'll just wing it. You know, it doesn't work that way. The point is that in order to be close to God in that way, the Kohanim, the priests, are more restricted than the rest of the Israelites. If the Kohanim are going to serve around the altar, right? They're going to serve between the altar and the steps, the porch, what's called the ulam. They're going to serve there. Their whole life is more restricted than the other Israelites. So the other Israelites may not have the access to that place of God that the Kohanim have, but they also don't have the restriction. So for instance, Kohanim, priests, they cannot come into contact with a corpse, right? They cannot contract corpse impurity, or else they'll disqualify from service. They also can't marry whoever they want to. So, yes, they have access and they get to work in a holier level, but they also have there's a price to pay for that. There's a price for everything, right? While the regular Israelites, they may not get the privilege of access, of as high access to, you know, the holy place and stuff as the Kohanim get, they also don't have to worry about a lot of the things that the Kohanim have to worry about, right? So when we talk about time, when we talk about, you know, offerings and tithes and those kinds of things, when we talk about the Kohanim, okay? So we said last week that, and I hope this made you think a little bit, that there is no individual in all of Tanakh, there's no individual human called Kadosh. Now, with the exception in 2 Samuel, I believe it is, where the Shunammite woman calls Elisha a holy man of God, right? Except for that one place, there's nowhere that an individual is called Kadosh. Now, this gets people a little bit upset, you know, or maybe a little uncomfortable, I should say. It's different, right? Because maybe for you grew up in a tradition where you looked up to a holy man of God or a holy woman of God, right? And what we said it out of respect, right? All those things, it's fine. But what we do see in Scripture is Am Kodesh, a holy people. You hear Am Yisrael Chai, the people of Israel live, Am Kodesh, holy people, right? Over a dozen times in just the Torah, we see this phrase, Am Kodesh, speaking of the people of Israel. And in every single instance, it is in conjunction with a call for Israel to observe the commandments, to observe the mitzvot. So this is what I was talking about earlier. And excuse me, I'm just looking up these passages because I want to read them with you. What I was talking about earlier is that God calls us holy. And yes, we are, because God declares that we are, right? I have no problem with that, with God's declaration. Yes, he calls us holy, but then we have to come into fullness of that. We have to move. God can call you holy all he wants. It will not do anything unless you engage with it, unless you begin acting towards him in a way that is holy, right? So, and the holiness comes through the restriction. You remember I said there's an ideal that God calls us. Yes, you're holy. And then there's the reality of who we really are. And sometimes those two things are worlds apart, like Mr. Miyagi, right? Wax on. Those two things are, if you're not watching this, sorry, you didn't see. But those two states of being can be way apart. And there can be a real mismatch there. So what gets us from what God calls us to who we're supposed to be, right? What's the bridge? It is the Torah. It is the Torah and the working of the Spirit. Those two things go together as the Spirit teaches us and guides us, and we put our own effort and will into becoming, because the Torah is restriction. The Torah is restriction. It is freedom, and it is life, and it is joy, and it is all the things that Psalm 117 call it, but it gets there through restriction, right? Again, where is the place of ultimate source of life? It's the Holy of Holies, but it's the most restricted place on earth. You see, it's kind of counterintuitive, but that's the way it works. So first, let's look at Leviticus chapter 19, verse 2, and it says, Adonai spoke to Moshe, is verse 1. Adonai spoke to Moshe saying, verse 2, speak to all the congregation of Bnei Israel and tell them, you shall be holy, kedoshim, for I, Adonai, your God, am holy. And then what does verse 3 say? Each one of you is to respect their mother and his father and keep my Shabbatot. I am Adonai, your God. Do not turn to idols. And it goes on to list about when you bring an offering and et cetera, what are you to do and not to do, right? He says, I'm holy. You be holy as I am holy. Then keep reading. What follows? Do's and don'ts. Okay? The next passage we're going to read is still in Vayikra. Excuse me. This is back in chapter 11. Chapter 11, verse 45. If you're driving, please don't turn there. But if you're watching, verse 45. Let's start in verse, 44. This whole chapter is full of, chapter 11 is all of the eating stuff, right? Is all of the dietary stuff. So verse 44 says, for I am Adonai your God. Therefore, sanctify yourselves. Oh, that's a form of Kedusha, right? Sanctify yourselves and be holy, for I am holy. Okay, great. There's the declaration. And then what does he say? In the same verse, verse 44, you are not to defile yourselves with any kind of creeping thing that moves on the earth, right? And I want to keep reading this because this is so good. We're going to get back to a similar verse later. He goes on in verse 45 to say, for I am Adonai who brought you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. Therefore, you should be holy, for I am holy. Now, the idea here is brought you up out of the land of Egypt. You'll notice that there is a theme and a pattern in Scripture that anytime people are coming from outside of Israel to Israel, they always come up to it. They always go up to Jerusalem, right? When geographically, certain parts of Jerusalem are lower than other hills around it, right? Like the Temple Mount is actually a little bit lower than the other hills around it. So going up to Jerusalem is not a geographic statement. Going up or a topographic statement. Going up to Jerusalem is a holiness statement. You are ascending. You are making aliyah. in synagogue, whenever you come up to read the Parsha, you make, it's called an aliyah, right? There are seven aliyot in every Parsha. And there are seven people that make aliyah. You come up to the bema. The bema is the lectern stand where you read the Torah from. It is a little bit higher than everywhere else. It's not so that you can be above everybody else. It's because the Torah is elevated. And whenever you come to the Torah, you have to elevate yourself, right? So Hashem brings the people of Israel up out of the land of Egypt. Well, when you go up, you are ascending in Kedusha. So what is naturally going to happen when you go up and you ascend a level of Kedusha? What's naturally going to happen? More restriction, more limitation, because that's the only way it can go. Again, Israel is called to be holy, but they don't have all the restrictions that the Kohanim have. The Kohanim don't have all the restrictions that the Kohen Gadol has. See what I'm saying? As you increase in holiness, your limitations and your restrictions. Here, God says, don't contaminate yourself with any creeping thing. I brought you up out of the land of Egypt. That's a level of Kedusha. That's a restriction. Okay? He says, I brought you up to be your God. Therefore, you should be holy, for I am holy. Right? You should be restricted because I am restricted. And we'll get to that at the end of this. Verse 44, it says, this is the Torah, or the teaching, the instruction of the animal, the bird, every living creature that moves in the water, and every living creature that creeps on the earth. And then this is the money verse. Verse 47 is the money verse. To make a distinction between the unclean and the clean, and between the living thing that may be eaten and the living thing that may not be eaten. Later on in Ezekiel chapter 44, it's going to say that the priests are there to teach you the difference between the profane and the holy, right? When we do Havdalah on Shabbat, we say a prayer that God is the one who separates the ordinary from the holy, the common from the holy, right? All right, now we're going to go to Deuteronomy, Devarim, chapter 14, and we're going to read, start in verse 21, I think. This is all about this again. This is the clean and unclean, and this is the dietary stuff, and verse 21 says, you are to not eat anything that dies of itself. You may give it to the outsider within your gate so that he may eat it, or you may sell it to a foreigner, for you are a holy people, Am Kodesh, to Adonai your God. You are not to boil a kid in its mother's milk. So there you go. You are an Am Kodesh, right? And then it's just full of restriction. It's all about what you can and can't do. And then one more, we'll go back to Vayikra chapter 20, back to Leviticus chapter 20, and we're going to read verse 26. And he says, let's do 25, okay? Let's do 23. I'm sorry, I can't. There's so much context. It's all so good. Let's do 22. Okay, Leviticus 20, 22. I'm sorry. All right, Leviticus 20, 22. He says, now you are to keep all my statutes and all my ordinances and do them so that the land where I'm bringing you to dwell will not vomit you out. Because why? Because the land is holy. And remember, you can't take something that's holy and regress its status. Verse 23, you are not to walk in the ways of the nation which I'm casting out before you, for they did all these things, and therefore I abhorred them. Verse 24, but I say to you, you will inherit their land, and I will give it to you to possess it, a land flowing with milk and honey. I am Adonai your God, who has set you apart from the peoples. That's Kedusha. I've set you apart. Great. So there you go. He's declaring our set apartness, our Kedusha, our holiness, right? Verse 25, also you are to make a distinction between the clean animal and the unclean, between the unclean bird and the clean. There's that distinction again, right? Just like we read before. He says, and you are not to make your souls detestable by an animal or by a bird or with anything which with the ground teems, which I have set apart as unclean to you. Oh, so technically, unclean things are kadosh as well, which means simply that they are set apart by legal restriction and limitation. Do you understand that? Does that broaden your understanding of kadosh, of kedusha? Finally, he says, you are to be holy to me, for I, Adonai, your God, am holy, and I've set you apart from the peoples so that you would be mine. Thank you guys for being with us. We love you. Shalom, shalom.